This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Yes, it's back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back.
Final hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, we'll break down all of the games from Week 10 in the NFL season. The Morrow Midday Show is brought to you by Baker Roofing. They have been in business for over 100 years. They're one of the largest, most recognized roofing contractors, and they provide residential and commercial roofing. In 1915, Baker Roofing Company was founded on the promise of always good work. So give our friend Matt Johnson, general manager of Baker Roofing Charleston, a call, or head on over to bakerroofing.com for more information. You can check out their incredible history or see all the different roofing types that are available online at bakerroofing.com. Over 100 years of always good work. Baker Roofing, bringing you the Morrow Midday Show. Catching up on some things here on Twitter. Brad said that true Gamecock fans knew exactly what was going to happen at Missouri. Yeah, you've been through it before, haven't you? And he said, in regards to basketball, when you shoot 1-for-18 and don't make your second three till a minute to go in the game, no team is winning that game. I do agree. We should know that we're not getting a three-point shooting team. That's the one negative against Frank Martin. And I like Frank. And he's been on the show before, and I liked that hire at the time, and I've defended him in the past. I really, when he was at Kansas State, when he was kind of becoming a known coach, I really liked him at the time, and I liked his style, but you know, I think the game's kind of passing them by a little bit at this point. And I don't think you should expect anything to be different from that basketball team and their inability to shoot it well from beyond the arc. Now, maybe these guys will develop and they'll become better shooters as the year goes on. We'll see, but it's hard to expect it at this point. What have you seen to believe that will be the case over the past decade? Meanwhile, Hustle and Crow, I like that name. No relation to Russell Crowe, said that Morrow Middays really doesn't like Cam Newton. But, hey, he's consistent. It's not so much about Cam. He's not the long-term answer. I mean, let's not fool ourselves here. He's probably the best option you have right now. Maybe he'll lead the Panthers to a playoff spot this year. They're a half game out of the playoffs currently. But as I was saying last hour, I think it's more about how the Panthers have gone about this quarterback carousel the last 3 years. Now think about it. Cam Newton, whether you're happy to have him back or not, regardless, he is the replacement to the replacement to his replacement. We wound up back at step one here. But I don't think he's the long-term solution. They're paying him for the rest of the year. There's a chance, of course, if things go well, they'll give him some sort of extension. But do you think Cam Newton is like a franchise quarterback at this point? And for the Panthers, in their case, it was just a year and a half ago that David Tepper did not think so. And now they think, yeah, maybe he could be the guy for the future. I don't think so. Yesterday was exciting if you're a Panthers fan because not only you get the big win, but then, of course, you know, Cam comes in and plays the big role. And I do agree, though, or I do stand by what I said earlier, that I didn't like all the attention given to him, not because Cam, but because of the other guys. He was the backup yesterday. He played a handful of snaps, and he's the one getting all the interviews. If I'm P.J. Walker, I'm like, hey, what about me over here? I was the starting quarterback today. And we won, and I was the actual starter. But we'll see if Cam can lead this team to the playoffs. And it'll be an interesting matchup when he goes up against Ron Rivera. If and when he goes up against Ron Rivera. I just don't think he's any sort of long-term solution. And I think the Panthers, a constant change here at the quarterback position, also may not bode well for how they make moves in the future. On the text line, and you can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Somebody asked on the text line, or said on the text line, if Cam performs well the rest of the way, they could re-sign him next year. It would also give them some more options in the first round of the draft. I like the GM. He likes to trade down and get picks. They can get those picks back from the Darnold trade by trading down. I think Cam starts in the Dolphins game or after the bye week. Yeah, I think Cam Newton's going to be the starter this week. I think you plug him in. I mean, they got him in right away in some packages. I think he'll be the starter moving forward for Carolina. And maybe he does give you a better option than P.J. Walker. But this goes against what I was just saying. I don't think he's your long-term guy. Now, there's not a great option in this quarterback draft class. There could be some good options on the market this offseason, depending on what happens with Deshaun and Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers and some of these other guys. But I just don't think Cam Newton, I think you're fooling yourself as a Panthers fan if you believe he's some sort of long-term solution. He's the answer for this year, to get you through this year. He's, you know, like you have something wrong at the house, you rig it just to last for a little while until you can have somebody come fix it down the road. Like, that's the case here. He's just a plug-and-play solution, but I don't think he's your guy for 2022. In the meantime, sure, be excited about it. You know, feel good. We'll see how well he plays, if he can get the Panthers some wins. But I think this is just a temporary solution, a temporary fix, and not some sort of long-term thing. But, I mean, and I think Cam said it himself after the game. You couldn't write it any better yesterday. He comes in, first play, gets a touchdown. He gets another touchdown. They beat the Cardinals on the road. And it's like, ah, this is what we're missing. This is why we need Cam Newton back. I don't know if it will be like that the rest of the way. All right, every week, every Monday in the show, we come in and I break down all of the games from Week 10 in the NFL season. I give you my previews prior to the weekend, and then we come in and I give you my reactions to all the games. So let's do it now. Let's break down all these games from Week 10 here of the NFL season, which wraps up tonight with Monday Night Football. Let's run through them.
Baltimore Ravens at Miami Dolphins.
This was the Thursday night game. Now, again, we were not on the air Friday. The big takeaway from this one, I guess it's twofold. Number one, where has that Dolphins team been all year? Why couldn't they play like that after winning 10 games a year ago? But number two for Miami, Tua did what was being done against him. Usually Ryan Fitzpatrick would come in, save the day. In this case, Jacoby Brissett gets injured. Tua comes off the bench and didn't play great right away, but did enough to win and kind of save the day. That was big for Tua and his development, because usually he's the one getting benched so someone else could come in and be the savior. This time, he was in that role. Now, it was a little questionable that apparently he was healthy enough to play and they didn't start him. That's not a good sign. But Tua getting that win was big. On the other side for the Ravens, they were, I don't know if I want to say exposed. That may be too strong of a word. But it's been a couple of weeks now. Teams are really blitzing Lamar Jackson. If you could keep him in the pocket and you could get some pressure on him, like any quarterback, and force him to try to beat you with his arm, that's where he has struggled. And boy, was that the case Thursday. Now, it was a short week on the road after playing an overtime game. I like the Dolphins in that spot to begin with. But they were sending the house after Lamar, and the Ravens had nothing. They had no answer. They didn't know what to do offensively, and he really struggled with his arm. So those are the concerns for Lamar and the Ravens, that when you force him to try to beat you with his arm, there are still some limitations there, and that was the case Thursday night against Miami.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers at Washington Football Team.
Tom Brady's worst game probably in quite some time, certainly this year. So much so that his post-game press conference, he cut short after just three questions and 60 seconds, and he gave some lousy questions, and he said right off the top, let's make this short. He was in no mood to talk. Now, the Buccaneers lost coming off a bye week against a bad Washington Football Team. For Washington Football Team, that's similar to the Dolphins. You wonder, like, where has this been? Right, after they made the playoffs last year, this defense was so good a year ago. It's been lousy this year. But yesterday, they had two interceptions and a three and out on the first three possessions for the Buccaneers. That's how the defense started. And Washington went on their longest drive of the season to put the game away at the end of the fourth quarter, which was big time for them. For the Buccaneers, they'll be just fine. But this was coming off a bye. Now, I know last year the Buccaneers turned things on coming off their bye week, but they lost this time coming off the bye, and I know it's a betting statistic, but Bruce Arians is under 500 in his career against the spread after a bye week. And we know Bruce Arians has the reputation of being a little looser than like a Bill Belichick. Good coaches take advantage of that time off. I wonder if that is the case with Arians, where he fines his coaches if they don't spend enough time with his family. So now you give a bye week. I don't know, maybe they took an extra day off. I'm not sure, but they came out, they played lousy yesterday to the Buccaneers. Don't worry, they'll be just fine moving forward. But coming out of the bye week, they looked like they were still in the bye week. They looked a little rusty. That was a bad performance for Brady and Tampa Bay.
Detroit Lions at Pittsburgh Steelers.
Touched on this earlier. I mean, this was the worst game of the day. This game was horrendous. This was even worse than the Jets-Bills blowout, which we'll get to in a moment. But for the Lions, if you can't win this game, then where is that first win going to come from? Jared Goff yesterday had 115 passing yards in a game that ended in a tie. They played a whole extra quarter, still had only 115 passing yards. Hasn't won a game without Sean McVay still. Brutal. And on the other side for the Steelers, they had two fumbles in overtime that both could have kept them from winning the actual game. They end up tying. This is just what Mike Tomlin does. Now, no Ben Roethlisberger. They had to play with Mason Rudolph, so that doesn't help. But you're at home against the winless Lions. I say it every week. Mike Tomlin plays the level of his competition. They'll win games they're not supposed to, and then they tie at home to the Lions, And they're kind of fortunate that was even a tie. The Lions were leading for a large portion of that game. That was just ugly yesterday. That was a bad game. I don't take much away from it. The Lions, we know, are a bad team, and the Steelers are not as bad as they played yesterday, but when they play bad teams, they play poorly as well. That's the one knock on Mike Tomlin, and that was really a disgraceful football game yesterday in Pittsburgh.
Cleveland Browns at New England Patriots.
Big-time win for New England. Now, I mentioned this as one of the games to watch this weekend because I wanted to see Baker Mayfield against Belichick. He lost against Belichick a couple years ago. He played terrible in this time around against Belichick yesterday. He was really bad. And I know he's injured. He got injured again. He had to come out of the game. That's not good either. But a big-time win for the Patriots. Mac Jones is playing really well. Watch out for New England. They're a half game out of first in the division. They've now been playing much better football. The defense is solid. It was swarming yesterday. Mac Jones is getting better each week. Belichick's teams always get better as the year goes on. If you're a football fan and you're not a Patriots fan, you probably hate New England. You've probably enjoyed the fact that they've been down a little bit the last year and a half. I got bad news for you. Here comes New England once again. They've won four games in a row. They have the second-best point differential in the AFC. In fact, they're right on pace with past Super Bowl-winning teams in terms of their point differential. This is a good Patriots team. They're 4-0 on the road. That's impressive. And for the Browns, I'll continue to say they're in last place right now, by the way, Cleveland. Baker Mayfield, I am not breaking the bank for him. He's Marcus Mariota. I saw this comparison over the weekend, and I agree. I like it. Right, Mariota with the Titans. He was good, but not great. Got them to the playoffs, but you knew he wasn't going to be a Super Bowl-winning quarterback. Then he was dealing with some injuries. Baker's now dealing with some injuries. And the Titans said, okay, we'll pick up your fifth-year option, but we're also going to go out and we're going to get Ryan Tannehill as our insurance policy. This is your last chance, Mariota. And then Mariota got injured, and they said, okay, enough of this. Let's go to Tannehill. And Tannehill's been really good. So for Baker Mayfield, they can pick up his fifth-year option next year, and then maybe you look to bring in somebody else. I don't know who that quarterback would be, that Ryan Tannehill, but you bring someone else in for that competition, and you give Baker that one last chance. And, hey, if you can't win this competition or you don't play well enough or this backup looks pretty good, all right, we'll just plug him in, and you leave in free agency at the end of the year. I think that's the way to go for the Browns. Baker has not been good enough. He was lousy yesterday, got injured once again, and that was a bad loss for Cleveland. They're now in last place in the AFC North.
Jacksonville Jaguars at Indianapolis Colts.
This game was almost as ugly as the Pittsburgh Steelers-Detroit Lions game. Trevor Lawrence had three completions at halftime, and yet it came down to the final possession. Lawrence was 3-for-15 throwing the football at halftime. This was brutal. And the Colts jumped out to an early, it was like 20-3. And I thought, perfect, because I took the Colts as double-digit favorites. I thought they're going to run away from this. And then they couldn't. And the Jaguars got back in the game, and they had a chance. Trevor Lawrence had a chance for his first game-winning drive in the NFL, and he fumbled in Colts territory in the two-minute drill to lose the game to the Colts by 6. Not good. Now, Trevor Lawrence, over the past 2 weeks, has a combined 280 yards in the two games, completing fewer than half of his passes, no touchdown passes, QBR of 35. It's been a tough stretch here the last couple of weeks for Trevor Lawrence. There's been some ups and downs this year, more downs than ups, but the last 2 weeks have been bad. They scored only 9 points against the Bills, and he didn't do much. Yesterday, they did score 23 against the Colts on the road, but he really didn't do much either, and then fumbled at the end of the game. So a bad couple of weeks here for Trevor Lawrence.
Atlanta Falcons at Dallas Cowboys.
This was the game I said we would find out about both of these teams. Find out if the Cowboys, if they were exposed or they're going to bounce back. Find out about the Falcons. Are they legitimate or has this just been a fun little start to the year? Well, we got a solid answer on Atlanta. Yeah, they're not some sort. And they may make the playoffs because that final wildcard team in the NFL could have a losing record with the way things are going so far in the NFC. Maybe that's the Falcons. But that was embarrassing yesterday. That's one of the worst losses you can have. And they're 4-5 now, but they have a minus point differential of 85, which is the second worst in the NFC. So even though they're 4-5, the numbers tell you they've overachieved to this point. That was brutal yesterday. I mean, and the Cowboys are still going for two. They're blocking punts. They're running up the score. Why was Dak Prescott still in the game so long and running the football went up by 30? I don't know. This is the second straight week Dallas has done that. They were down 30, then they're up 30. They're keeping Dak out there, and he's running around. I don't know why you take that risk, but this was brutal. I guess this was the Dan Quinn revenge game. Dan Quinn became the first coach to take a team to a Super Bowl and then beat them later as a defensive coordinator. First time that's ever happened, which surprised me. And for Dan Quinn, the 3 points that they allowed yesterday were the fewest for the Cowboys in 5 seasons. So that was an impressive performance by Dan Quinn and his defense against the Falcons. That was a brutal game. If you're an Atlanta fan, hopefully you turned it off pretty quickly. That's an embarrassing loss for the Falcons, and I think it shows like, yeah, you know what, a fun start to the year, but this team is still a ways away.
New Orleans Saints at Tennessee Titans.
Well, credit to the Saints for hanging in there. You kind of have to blame their kicker. They lost by two in Tennessee yesterday. They missed two extra points, so they had to go for two at the end of the game to try to tie it and didn't convert. They're down to like their fourth kicker. If you make your extra points, they're then kicking an extra point to take the lead there in the final minute, maybe are getting out of Tennessee with a big-time win over the Titans, doing it without their top two quarterbacks and their top running back and their top receiver who's still out for the year. So for the Saints, I mean, that's one of those losses that you feel bad because you came so close and almost won. But if you take a step back, and I know this doesn't help you make the playoffs, but you were on the road against the best team in football based off of records. You're down to your third-string quarterback. You don't have your star receiver or running back. You don't have a kicker. You missed two extra points, can't get a two-point conversion, and still had a chance to win or at least tie in the two-minute drill. So a heck of an effort from New Orleans. For Tennessee, meanwhile, they're now 8-2. Wasn't an impressive win, but a win's a win, and they have now won six in a row. I'll reiterate that they have the easiest schedule the rest of the way. So the Titans, in an ugly win yesterday, still keep the winning streak alive. They should get the number one seed in the AFC with their schedule the rest of the season.
Buffalo Bills at New York Jets.
Yeah, this game was terrible too. So this puts a rest to the whole Mike White love in New York. The Bills had five forced turnovers from five different defensive backs. How about that? Five different defensive backs had a turnover forced for Buffalo. And the offense played well, and they blew out the Jets yesterday. The main takeaway from this one, you know, it's funny. For the Jets, they hire Adam Gase, and the offense is terrible. He's an offensive coach. So then they hire Robert Saleh, defensive coach, and the defense is now terrible this year. The Jets just became the first team since 1966 to allow 45 points or more three times in a month. It was done by the Giants in 1966. Hadn't been done since until now. The Jets have allowed 45 points or more in three of the last four games. This defense is so bad, and that's exactly what the doctor ordered for Buffalo because their offense had been scuffling a little bit the last couple of weeks. So they went to New York, put it on the Jets, and the Bills remain in first place in the AFC East. For the Jets, enough of the Mike White. This defense is horrendous. This is a bad team.
Minnesota Vikings at Los Angeles Chargers.
Hey, big win for the Vikings. I do have my Vikings sneakers on. Don't worry, I have a different pair of sneakers in the car for tonight's basketball game. I got to be somewhat professional, but I got the Vikings sneakers on today for a victory Monday. Best game they've played all year. Most complete game. They coughed up a double-digit deficit once again, but then came back with a couple of fourth-quarter touchdowns to put it away. But the focus here is on the Chargers because they have now lost three out of four after a good start to the year. Here's the thing with L.A. It's twofold. Number one, the defense can't get off the field. They have the worst rush defense in the league. So yesterday, Justin Herbert had the football for a third of the game. The Vikings' time of possession was twice as much as the Chargers. That's not good. When your star quarterback is on the sideline for two-thirds of the game, it's tough to win that way. But number two, Justin Herbert hasn't been playing as well lately. In those four games in which they've lost three of them, there's been a little bit of a blueprint on the Chargers that was put out by the Ravens when they blew them out. And it was simply just blitz Justin Herbert. Teams are now blitzing him at a high rate each week. And the Chargers are averaging just 19 points per game over their last four. Justin Herbert has four interceptions in those four games. He hasn't played that great. So a little bit of a blueprint right now. Young quarterback in Justin Herbert. Three new starters on the offensive line this year, including a rookie at left tackle. Teams are saying, hey, let's just send the house at him and see what he can do. And right now that offense is struggling. The defense can't get off the field. Add it up, and the Chargers have lost three out of four. They're only one game over 500 right now. This, for me, was a team I thought would be one of the better ones in the AFC.
Carolina Panthers at Arizona Cardinals.
So we've already touched on this a little bit. It's a big-time win for the Panthers. I know the Cardinals at one point were down to their third-string quarterback, but look, they just beat the Niners by multiple scores last week without Kyler Murray and Hopkins and A.J. Green and J.J. Watt. So they're capable. They're still capable. And this was a good win for Carolina, especially after the noise. You bring in Cam Newton, you get the Sam Darnold injury, you think like, oh boy. Normally, when you lose your quarterback, you think like, that's it for us this year. For the Panthers, maybe it's addition by subtraction with Sam Darnold out. And now you go on the road and you hand it to Arizona. And I saw that stat. If you were watching the game yesterday, you saw it too. The Panthers are now, what, 6-0 all time against the Cardinals? And all six wins have been by double digits? Something like that? The Panthers have been historically dominant against the Cardinals for whatever reason. And yesterday was another example. Now, if you're Arizona, look, you took it on the chin yesterday, but you're 8-2. You got to try to get healthy. You got the bye week coming up here soon. So for the Cardinals, that's one of those, kind of like the Cowboys when they sat Dak Prescott. You can kind of afford a loss at this point. They still have the number one seed in the NFC. They still have the best record tied with Green Bay now. So, you know, you can kind of afford that loss, but you don't want them to add up. You want to try to get Kyler Murray back, because as well as Colt McCoy played last week, what do they say? Water always finds its level, whatever it is. Water always levels out along those lines. That's like your backup quarterback. They can play well for a couple of weeks, but eventually they're going to turn back into a pumpkin and show you why they're the backup. You can't rely on Colt McCoy for too long. So if you're the Cardinals, you got to try to get Kyler Murray back before you start to lose ground in the NFC.
Philadelphia Eagles at Denver Broncos.
This was a really disappointing game for the Broncos. You're coming off a nice win against the Cowboys. You're returning home against the Eagles, who were 3-6. This was another one of those, I guess, letdown spots for the Broncos. And they lost, and they did not play well. And the Eagles had total command. They ran it all over Denver in that defense. They came out, they jumped out to an early double-digit lead, and then the game that the play that sealed the fate, the outcome was a fumble recovery for the Broncos at the end of the third quarter. Or for the Eagles, I should say, against the Broncos. The Broncos were heading into the red zone. The Eagles returned it for a touchdown. That was a 14-point swing. The Eagles won by 14. By the way, everyone's poking fun at Teddy Bridgewater making a business decision by letting the defender, Slay, run right by him on that return instead of trying to tackle him. It's fine with me. I know that was a big play in the game. And if it's Teddy Bridgewater, all due respect, I guess you're not too concerned it's not an Aaron Rodgers. But look, Baker Mayfield injured himself trying to make a tackle after an interception, and that may alter the entire season. He's still playing with that injury. The Browns are now 500. I don't want my quarterback potentially hurting himself making a play like that. In the case of Teddy Bridgewater, again, it's not an Aaron Rodgers. If you lose him for a week or two, is it so deflating? Not so much. But just in general, people are giving Teddy a hard time. In general, I like my quarterbacks to stay out of trying to make tackles because that's where they get injured. And it's one play over the course of a season. I don't want my guy out for the season.
Seattle Seahawks at Green Bay Packers.
Now that I think about it, there were a lot more tougher watches yesterday than I realized. Right, I talked about the Lions-Steelers game. This was another one. This was brutal. It showed that even Hall of Fame quarterbacks can be rusty after a couple of weeks off. That game looked like a game in which you have two quarterbacks who haven't played in a little while. Now, Rodgers was better, but I don't think he was that great. He had an interception in the red zone at home for the first time in over 2 years. Russell Wilson, though, was shut out for the first time in his career. And I think Russ, we all know, he kind of rushed himself back. He came back a lot sooner than expected. Still doesn't have feeling in that finger. I think that's a little weird when it's on your throwing hand. I'm not an NFL quarterback, but I think it'd be a little odd if one of your fingers, you can't feel the football. I don't think that helps. Russ was bad yesterday. So were the Seahawks. They didn't score. Packers were just a little bit better. It was just one of those that, hey, it is what it is. You got two quarterbacks coming off some time off, both dealing with some health stuff. And that's what you got yesterday playing out. Credit to the Packers for being the team to find a way to win. Being at home helps. They're now 8-2, and the Seahawks are in big trouble. They're now 3-6 in last place, and it looks like we may have our first ever losing season in Russell Wilson's career.
Kansas City Chiefs at Las Vegas Raiders.
For the Chiefs, we're going to point to last night. Everyone's going to come in today, and they already have, saying this is the turnaround. Maybe it will be, but we have to see it. You have to start to stack up some good performances. And this could be the one that we'll point to and say, that's when they got back on track. That very well could be the case. You know, for Kansas City, I thought they got back to a little bit of basics last night that led to some of the bigger plays they had. But it's like when I remember when I was getting my driver's license all those years ago in driving school, and you go drive around with the instructor, and you go on the highway for the first time. And for the first time, you could drive really fast. And then you get off the highway, and the instructor would always say, like, okay, we're not on the highway anymore, because now, as a young driver, you were just going 70, whatever it was. You get off the highway, you know, you still want to be punching it and going quickly. And I remember my instructor would always say, remember, you're not on the highway, right? Because I probably had a little bit of a lead foot at that point, and I was trying to drive too fast through the town after just getting off the highway. My point being, for the Chiefs, they were so used, they were doing the highway driving for years. Big plays, throwing it downfield. Now you're off the highway and you're driving through the town, and you have to understand you can't drive the same way on the highway that you can't drive the same way through the town that you do on the highway. Right? And that's the Chiefs. That you have to figure out a way that you can't just go fast, you can't throw it downfield all game. And I thought they did a lot of that last night, where they kind of got back to basics. Pat Mahomes had probably his best game of the year. The Chiefs played pretty, really well. They're back in first place now. Maybe this gets them going. This is the turning point. Meanwhile, for the Raiders, back-to-back losses, bad loss yesterday. I'll say it again, that eventually you knew all of this noise and the issues would catch up to them, and I think it has here in these past 2 weeks. We'll see if the Raiders can now turn things around like the Chiefs are trying to.
Los Angeles Rams at San Francisco 49ers.
This is the Monday Night Football game tonight. It's a big one for the Niners. We'll probably get the debut of OBJ. I'll give you my thoughts on this when we come back. Plus my pick for tonight. And just my thoughts also, what stood out to me about OBJ going to the Rams. And we'll do that coming up when we return. But that's your breakdown of Week 10 in the NFL season. And we'll get ready for Monday Night Football, and I'll give you my official pick when we return. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Just gave you my breakdown and run-through of Week 10 in the NFL season. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston. Get to Monday Night Football coming up in just a moment. Give you my pick for tonight. I know on the text line, you can always text the show 843-608-1734. Somebody asked about Grayson McCall, the quarterback of Coastal Carolina, if he's eligible for the draft next year. He is. This is his third year with Coastal, so he's free to go. Hayden Hooker, quarterback of Tennessee, yeah, he also is eligible. So they're mentioned on the text line as names for the Panthers. I don't think this is a great time to be in need of a quarterback when it comes to the draft, but there's always some surprises, usually, except for, what was that, 2013, E.J. Manuel's class that year. That was a terrible draft class for quarterbacks. This could be similar to that, but as I mentioned earlier, you know, I keep an eye on somebody like Kenny Pickett, who has a lot of experience. 5-year quarterback, over 50 starts in college, will be 24 years old. I like that. Mac Jones, older. Joe Burrow, older. Justin Herbert, older. These are the guys that have had success quickly in the NFL, whereas Josh Rosen was a young guy, 20 years old. Sam Darnold was the youngest guy drafted in the first round. Dwayne Haskins, after just 1 year, was a younger guy. And they're the ones that have struggled. So I like that experience that Kenny Pickett brings, or even a Sam Howell, right? These 4- and 5-year starters, 24-year-olds. I like that if I'm going to go draft a quarterback. You can always join the conversation, 843-721-9500, to give us a call. Let's go to the phones because Super Dave is with us. Dave, what's going on? How are you?
How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing okay. What's up?
First game I looked. Well, listen to was Auburn to Mississippi State.
Uh-huh.
That was a wild game. They went ahead like 28-3, and then Mississippi State just fought, and then just come back like 40-something to 30-something.
Yeah, how about that?
Is that right?
Yeah, it was something along those lines, 44-35, I don't remember what it was, but yeah, they came back and won. It was crazy.
That was a crazy ball game. That means Auburn is beatable, whoever they play next.
Oh, you know who they play next.
Carolina, right?
You got it. That's right.
So Carolina at least got a shot at winning that game, you know?
They sure do.
Because Auburn just showed they was exposed. Talk about exposed. They was. So, you know, Carolina needs that win. Because as predicted, Missouri just tore. There's always a pain in the side of Carolina. Carolina just can't get a win over Missouri. The quarterback's real good. But they got a chance to win at this Auburn game.
Well,
a feeling it'll be like by 7 points.
Who by 7? Who's going to win by 7?
Carolina.
Whoa, all right. There you go.
Carolina should go by with 7 and, you know, beat this team.
Okay.
So
I hope
means they'll be 5. I don't know if they go bowl.
If they win Saturday, they'll be eligible for a bowl. How would you celebrate? You're going to have a bowl of cereal? You're going to have a bowl of soup? What would you do when the Gamecocks become bowl eligible?
I'd take a bowl of ice cream or something.
Oh, there you go. That's right. How could I forget? Yeah, a bowl of ice cream.
Because Shea Bieber can be proud that, you know, the losses he did was not great, but they're coming back. If they get a win, Mississippi State embarrassed. Because they said Auburn fans left the stadium angry, you know?
Of course.
And I think that Auburn now is beatable, you know, far as their mind on the game and everything.
Yeah, you think they're going to beat them by 7.
I don't think they're going to get over that loss.
All right, so you think the Gamecocks win by 7, and when they do, you're going to celebrate the bowl eligibility by having a nice bowl of ice cream.
Yeah, like Oreo ice cream would be great.
Oh, yeah, Oreo ice cream. You put any toppings on that Oreo ice cream?
It don't need no toppings.
No,
it's
you don't.
Like it is.
You got that right. You just have that Oreo ice cream and celebrate a bowl appearance for the Gamecocks. Damn straight. Super Dave's prediction, a 7-point win for South Carolina on Saturday. South Carolina, by the way, is a 7-point dog against Auburn to open up. So that's a little interesting. Now, for Auburn... Well, both teams. South Carolina had a disappointing loss. Now they return home. So, and a bowl on the line, you'd imagine South Carolina's hungry for Auburn. They just got embarrassed. That was a bad loss. A lot of people are unhappy, right? You give up 40 unanswered points. You blow a 25-point lead at home to Mississippi State, who, look, they've had some big wins this year, but they're still entering that game. They're 5-4. You were a favorite at home. You got to win that one. You lose, and then insult to injury, or I guess in this case, injury to insult, is Bo Nix gets injured. You lose your starting quarterback, and I've never been the biggest Bo fan, but he has been playing well this year with the new offense of Mike Bobo. Now you lose him, but here's the thing. As you look ahead to Saturday, you're a Gamecock fan. You think, okay, we're at home. Auburn's without their starting quarterback. But, you know, T.J. Finley transferred in from LSU, and if you go back to last year and you know, different teams, different players, different coaches, you know, it was Finley who had more success against South Carolina, and that was in his first career start. Than Bo Nix had against South Carolina. Nix had 3 interceptions last year. So, you know, if you're the Gamecocks, it seems like a good opportunity. Like, ooh, they're down their starting quarterback. And Nix is playing better this year than he was last year. But I don't know. T.J. Finley played pretty well against South Carolina last year. You know, he was pretty good with LSU. He's looked decent when he's filled in this year. So he's coming to town on Saturday. We'll see how that goes. But South Carolina, a 7-point dog to begin against Auburn. And if they win... they're going to a bowl. You could have a bowl of cereal. You could have a bowl of soup, a bowl of ice cream. You could have one of those, like, you know, go like to an Asian, like a rice bowl. Those are real good. Celebrate the Gamecocks potentially getting to a bowl if they win on Saturday. 843-721-9500 to join the conversation. Let's go back to the phones. Travis is with us. Travis, what's going on? How are you?
Hey, doing well. How are you doing today, sir?
Good. What's up?
Real quick, I'm going to go ahead and call the upset. Carolina does beat Auburn this weekend. Just because I'm not a fan of my brother-in-law that much. And I told you Tennessee was not – I called last week. Tennessee didn't stand a chance. Tennessee fans don't need to be so upset. They looked good the first 2 drives, but after that it was done.
Yes. Yeah, it was. You know, I said that was a big test for Georgia, but they passed the test with pretty much flying colors, especially in those last 3 quarters, and got a very commanding win. So for Georgia, they've passed all the tests. Now the question's just, you know, if this is the team that could get them over that hump and win the biggest game of the year.
I hope so. We got 2 bye weeks coming up. We got Charleston Southern and Georgia Tech. And get out with no injuries, get it over with, and hopefully beat Bama.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly. That's the hope. Right on. Hey, congrats on the win, and good luck against your brother-in-law and Auburn. Interesting family dynamics there. But, yeah, Georgia, like I said to open the show, they were one of my winners today. Every Monday we come in, I give you my winners and losers from the football weekend. Georgia was a winner, and I've included them as a winner just about every week because they keep passing the test. And while everyone else is losing around them this week, you know, Oklahoma, the latest team that was in the championship conversation to lose, Georgia just keeps taking care of business, just trucking right along. And in this case, I was billing it up for about 10 days that this is an interesting test. Now, I didn't think Tennessee was going to win. I didn't think they were good enough to win, but I did think they would cover the 21, and they didn't. I thought they would keep it under 20 points. I thought the offense would do some good things. And they came out and hung in there in the first quarter, and I thought, okay, this is what I was expecting. And then Georgia turned it on the final 3 quarters and put Tennessee away and you know, passed that test certainly with relative ease and gets that win. So now next up, as Travis mentioned there, right, you don't have to worry about the rest of the regular season. Charleston Southern and Georgia Tech, you don't have to worry about that. It just simply comes down to the SEC championship, but specifically the SEC championship if it's Alabama. If it's Georgia against Ole Miss, for example, that would be a fun matchup, that offense against that defense. But I wouldn't be as concerned. There's just something, there's that bugaboo, that hurdle of Alabama specifically. And then if Georgia gets the playoff, of course, right, the idea of winning the biggest game of the year. Because even if you lose the SEC title game, Georgia's going to be in the playoff. So really it comes down to winning the biggest game of the year, which will come in the playoff. And that's the final test for Georgia. And if they pass that one, they'll be national champs. But the question is the quarterback good enough? Is the coach good enough? Can Kirby Smart finally win that big game? And can Stetson Bennett, who played well on Saturday, you know, he's been playing pretty well lately. But still, when you go up in a national championship against the next best team in the country, is he good enough to make the plays? He may be good enough against Tennessee. A little bit different if you go up against, I don't know who the second best team in the country is. I don't know. Just say Alabama or Ohio State. Ohio State, their offense is pretty good, so your quarterback may have to make some plays to beat them. Do you trust that the mailman can do it in the national championship against a team like that? Those are the final tests for Georgia, but those tests, if you answer them, you'll be national champions, and you won't have to answer them just yet. Right? They've cleared all the tests in the regular season. Now we'll just wait and see if this is the team that can finally get over that 40-year hurdle for Georgia football. Monday Night Football is tonight. I always give you a pick. I'm going with the Niners tonight. 3.5-point underdog against the Rams. I'm taking the home dog, Monday Night Football. Kyle Shanahan's won 4 straight against Sean McVay. 3 of those 4 games, he's won outright as an underdog. They're an underdog tonight. They're at home. The Niners, this is their season. If they lose now, you could start talking about Trey Lance moving forward. So I'll take the Niners tonight. 3.5-point dog at home. They've been terrible at home. They haven't won at home all year. So I guess I'm also kind of counting on like a progression, not a regression to the mean, but a progression to the mean that yeah, eventually you've got to win a home game somewhere. They've lost 11 of 12 at home. Season on the line tonight. Shanahan knows McVay well. He usually beats him. I'm going to take my chances with the Niners at home as a 3.5-point dog. I'll take the home dog on Monday Night Football, and we'll see how it goes tonight. OBJ, most likely, I imagine, will debut tonight. I know there's talks about him even being a punt returner for the Rams just because they want him on the field. Just my 2 cents briefly, because we were not on the air Friday, and that news broke, I think, was Thursday, about OBJ signing with the Rams. It came down, reportedly, to the Rams and the Packers. He chose the Rams. I think this is the big difference. Look, the Rams were in a Super Bowl more recently than the Packers. The Rams, I think, are a better team than the Packers this year. The Rams are more aggressive, kind of like the Buccaneers, who just won a Super Bowl last year. The Packers have never been aggressive adding names, big names, which is ironic because they had the first free agent ever. But since then, you know, have never really added big names outside of the draft, whether it's trades or free agency. So if you're OBJ, you look at those two options, Rams or Packers, both good options. But I look at the Rams. They were aggressive. They brought in Sean McVay, who nobody knew who he was at the time. They went out and they traded for Matt Stafford this offseason. They just signed Von Miller. They brought in Jalen Ramsey when he had a bad reputation. Even if you want to say Robert Woods, when they brought him from Buffalo, that's worked out. Cooper Kupp taking him at the top of the third round when nobody heard from him. Nobody heard of him coming out of Eastern Washington. They brought in Sue a couple of years ago when nobody wanted to touch him. The Rams, number one, have been aggressive. Number two, have also turned guys around. Robert Woods, much better in L.A. than he was in Buffalo. Matt Stafford, the idea is he's going to be better, or at least already has been better in L.A. than he was in Detroit. So on and so forth. So for OBJ, you're choosing between those two organizations. I think that helps make the difference. The Packers have never been that aggressive team. The Rams probably were more aggressive in their pitch. And then also you look at the two teams, the Rams have turned their guys. They've under Sean McVay, the people they've brought in have gotten better. Here's a chance for you. And the way it now works out for the Rams, I didn't really like the move to begin with, but then Robert Woods gets injured, and it's like, oh, perfect. Here's our replacement, OBJ, already on the roster. You know, timing is everything. And in that sense, the timing works out for OBJ and the Rams. You, of course, don't want to lose Robert Woods. But if they didn't sign OBJ, if he did go to Green Bay and then you lose Robert Woods, you think, like, oh, boy, that now we're in trouble. Now all we have is Cooper Kupp. So we'll see if OBJ debuts tonight and how big of a role he plays for the Rams. I'm sure he'll be out there plenty. But I'll take the Niners, 3.5-point dog at home on Monday Night Football to at least cover the spread. And we'll see how it goes. Coming up, I'll circle back to the winners and losers from over the weekend. And if we have some time, which NFL team, maybe we'll save this for tomorrow, which NFL team do you trust the most to turn things around in the second half of the year? It's the Moore Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Welcome back. Your dreams were your ticket out. Welcome back to that same old place that you laughed about. Well, the names have all changed since you hung around, but those dreams have remained and they've turned around. Who'd have thought they'd lead ya?
Who'd have thought they'd lead ya?
Back here where we
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. I saw somebody posted on Twitter saying that all their middle schoolers, I guess she's a teacher, all of her middle schoolers came in today imitating Cam Newton by yelling, "I'm back." Which goes right with this song, I guess. Welcome back, Cam Newton. Her name's Emily, and she said, instant impact in Charlotte about Cam Newton's return. Yeah, you know, he's somebody that, whether he plays well on the field or not, he's, I don't know if I'd say polarizing, but he's just, he's a star on and off the field, and people love him. So Panther fans, I'm sure, are excited that Carolina brought him back for, you know, even if it doesn't get you to a Super Bowl this year, even the playoffs, just to be able to, if you're going to be bad, right, if you're going to lose games, might as well watch Cam Newton out there instead of P.J. Walker lose those games for the Panthers. We'll see how they do moving forward. We'll get to it tomorrow on the show, but which team do you trust the most? Panthers are in that category of teams to turn it around second half of the year, because it has been 34 straight years that a team 500 or below at the midway point makes the playoffs in the NFL. And so this has been the midway point here these last 2 weeks. There are plenty of teams that are still hovering around that 500 mark or even, you know, slightly under 500. Which one do you trust to make a run second half of the season? Is it Carolina now with Cam Newton at the quarterback position here seemingly moving forward? We'll see. But that was a good win for them yesterday against the Cardinals, regardless. In regards to college football, I always open things today with winners and losers, and I think Dave Aranda is the biggest winner of the weekend, the head coach of Baylor for getting that big win against Oklahoma. And then you also have Oklahoma State taking over the Big 12 with their big win. Those were the two biggest, to me, biggest movements over the weekend. Other big winners for me were more of coaches. You know, Todd Grantham at Florida, the defensive coordinator who got fired and the defense went out and played like that against Samford. Lane Kiffin for the job his offense did against Texas A&M, getting a nice win there, and Ole Miss being the second-best team in their division. Mike Leach, for similar reasons, with the job he did coming back against Auburn, his offense played well. Mississippi State's going to a bowl. They've beaten three ranked teams this year. That's pretty good. And then towards the bottom of my list, I had Ohio State and Georgia as well. For, you know, Georgia, as mentioned last segment, passed the test of beating Tennessee. And Ohio State, that's their best win of the year, the way they beat the spoiler makers and by how much they did it. Defense still not great, but the offense has been really good. And lastly, my last winners were combined, Oregon State and ECU both punching their ticket to a bowl this weekend. For Oregon State, first time since 2013. ECU, first time since 2014. So good on them. For the players, that's a fun experience to go play in a bowl game, at least if it's somewhere cool. And the biggest loser of the weekend, I did think, was Texas. It wasn't the most impactful loss. Right? Maybe that was Oklahoma to the playoff picture, but Texas was the most embarrassing. Texas and Oklahoma were the big losers. Dan Mullen comes out of this looking bad as well with that game against Samford. But as I said to start the afternoon, you got to give him some time. I think he's built up enough cachet to have one down year. Give him a second year to try to turn it around. And if he has another bad year next year, okay, then you move on. Right? Just like Texas, as embarrassing of a loss as that was, you know, can you give Steve Sarkisian a little time to get settled there? Can he have one bad year before turning things around? Other guys that made my list of losers, Jimmy Lake, who actually lost his job with Washington. Matt Campbell, whose stock has dropped, kind of like Dan Mullen. Those two guys, their stocks have dropped probably the most this year. Manny Diaz for that bad loss for Miami against Florida State. Auburn for blowing a 25-point lead and really blowing their season the last 2 weeks. And then the Gamecocks were last on my list of losers for that letdown spot against Missouri. You beat Florida, you're feeling good, you go on the road in a winnable game against Missouri, and you don't play so well, and you lose. I know it was a close game by the end, but it wasn't as close as that final score would indicate if you watched the game. As I said earlier, Florida, they're just the promiscuous classmate with no inhibitions that you come across at the perfect time. When you have no self-esteem and you come across that girl, and right, and then, oh, you have a fun night, and you think, oh, that was very special, until you realize that she's already been with half of your biology class, and you think, oh, that wasn't as special as I thought. That's Florida. You beat Florida, you feel good, and then you see them struggle against Samford, you lose to Missouri, and you realize, like, oh, that wasn't as good as I thought. We just got Florida at the right time when we needed to feel good about ourselves, and that team right now is a disaster. Things change, right, with a little more perspective when you move away from the games. Now for South Carolina, got to win at home against Auburn on Saturday. We'll wrap up your Monday when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
We're a winner and never let anybody say, boy, you can't make it because a feeble man is in your way. No more tears do we cry. And we have finally dried our eyes and we're moving on up, moving on up. Lord, have mercy, we're moving on up. We're moving on.
Going a funky finish here Monday afternoon here on the Morrow Midday Show. With Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Appreciate listeners hanging with us from at least 10 different states and multiple countries here on this Monday afternoon. You can always take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by simply streaming us online, charlestonsportsradio.com, or through TuneIn Radio, your smart speaker, or our free app. Just search ESPN Charleston in the App Store. You can also find the podcast there. If you ever miss anything from the show, find it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcasts, or through our free app or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. As always, got to plenty here on this Monday. Not everything I even wanted to. I got plenty more to get to tomorrow on the show. We'll get to our Tuesday Top 10. I'll let you know where I was right, where I was wrong. Plus a ranking of the best coaches in the NFL this year. We got plenty to do tomorrow. Don't forget the Citadel taking on Presbyterian tonight. 7 o'clock tip-off. Coverage begins at 6:30 on our sister station, The City, 102.1 FM. Bulldogs will try to start the year 3-0. Life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. For now, we say goodbye. We'll say hello again tomorrow at noon. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.